It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Today, our special guest is John Devine. John is senior economist with Cotton Incorporated. He'll join us in just a moment. First off, let's talk cattle on feed report. Fairly lackluster report. Glenn Tonser, livestock economist at Kansas State University, says...
Yeah, and I've said this before, sometimes that's exactly what we want, and if there was ever a week where we wanted a non-event report, it would be this one, given what else is going on. So, yes, the cattle on feed report did not have major surprises. So, February 1st on feed, up 1% compared to February of 21. January marketing's down 3%. January placement's down 1%. And, you know, my notes here, they were well right on line with the pre-report expectations. I don't think they were market movers. And in many ways, by the time you and I are talking here, the market's already moved on from that report. So, yes, it is okay to have a vanilla report at times, and we definitely had one this month.
It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. We're joined today by John Devine. John is with Cotton Incorporated, chief economist there. And, John, first off, welcome back to the show and welcome to 2022.
Well, thank you very much. Always great talking with you.
Well, and I'm welcoming you to a new year. And here we are now into the third month of the year because, things have just been busy when it comes to the cotton market. And, you know, we're watching some prices that really we haven't seen in quite a while. And the last time we saw prices like this, completely different situation, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I mean, last time we take a look at the price spike, it was very fleeting, very steep in terms of its increase and also its decline. This time it's a little bit more slow moving and hopefully has given growers out there a better opportunity to market their cotton at some of these good prices.
Let's rewind the clock just a moment or two and look back at 2021. We actually still have a few gins ginning cotton at this point. I know AMS still classing some of the bells as well, so we're not quite able to pinpoint an exact number yet for total production in 2021. But overall, would you say it's been a good year?
Yeah, certainly better than it was the year before. You know, the year before we were struggling with a series of weather issues, a lot of dryness, and also a series of hurricanes that we didn't have in the 21 season. So we can be grateful for that. Abandonment rates significantly lower. And that helped bring production up. And even though we've got higher production, we still have these good prices.
We look at the Cotton Incorporated website. There's quite a few really useful pieces of information in there. One is the weekly cotton crop quality report. And I just happened to look at that earlier today. And notice that the number of bells classed over 16.5 million, and when we start looking at some of those averages there, this has been a pretty good crop, hasn't it?
Yeah, quality readings looking really good. So on top of having more bales to sell, we've got a lot of quality bales to sell too. So it's been a good year.
Well, let's talk about those who are buying the U.S. cotton at this point, and why we're seeing is it demand driven that's pushing the price of cotton? And now I'm talking about the old crop is somewhere in that 120 to 123 range, and your new crop December is trading anywhere from 101 to 104 or so. And I know we're talking about two different crops at this point, but is this demand driven?
I think you can make it an argument that it's partially demand-driven, or at least in terms of, some tightness that's been created by demand. When you take a look at, the major markets around the world, the one that really stands out in terms of there having been some tightening of supply recently, it's the U.S. Last crop year, we saw our stocks get significantly tighter, pulling, even with the tightest stocks-to-use ratios that we've had going back over the past 20 years. So there's an argument that can be made that, there is tightness in U.S. supplies, and that's contributing to the increases that we've seen in prices. And part of the reason why we've had that tightness goes back to the smaller crop we had in the 2021 crop year, and also the strong demand that we had during that crop year as well. We sold a lot of cotton, particularly to China. We doubled our exports to China last crop year. And now that we're seeing other markets get into the action in the current crop year, that's also a factor supporting demand and also could be related to some of the increases that we've seen in cotton prices.
When we talk about exports, hard to do that without also including in that conversation the strength or lack thereof of the U.S. dollar. Is that a factor we're watching as well?
Yeah, so it's a factor that's out there. You take a look at what has been, I think, other factors that contributed to some of the increases in cotton prices. You can take a look at the market sort of as moving in two different legs. I think one leg was the initial recovery from COVID, and that was supported by actions that taken by the Federal Reserve and other stimulus measures that were out there. But if you take a look at the movement in cotton prices from its bottom in late March, early April of 2020 through September of this year, you could see the cotton market moved generally, linearly higher, pretty much in step with the S&P 500. Now, normally you wouldn't expect cotton prices to be so correlated with indexes of stock prices, but given the fact that the stimulus was there and it was unprecedented, I think that did help us move in a relatively linear fashion for a year or so there. But since then, I think we've been off the races. The market's got a lot more volatile. That pulled us up, well over a dollar in the fall. And, I think some of the strength of demand from markets like China helped pull us higher there. Also, the shipping crisis and some of the challenges we've had in getting that cotton to the markets that want it also may have contributed to both the volatility and the strength of prices since September.
So I was also, the last one that I had an opportunity to see, your monthly economic letter from last month, talked about China and some of the challenges happening internally with China in where they were having difficulty selling to mills due to differences in price expectations. For those who don't really understand how things work in China, obviously we don't have hours to roll all this in and really explain it, but kind of our cup of coffee discussion here over how things flow through China. How do you help us understand that?
Yeah, so a big question for market analysts such as myself over the past year or so has been, how we've been able to get to these high prices, even though our global stock figures are actually pretty healthy. And I think one way that we can help get there is just take a look at where those global stocks are held. And China is top on the list. In the past, China's done some funny things in terms of the government holding on to reserves, but that's not the situation right now. China's reserves are, at what we could consider to be a normal level. When you take a look at stocks outside of the reserve system in China, which in theory are free to the market, they're at record levels. So the question is, if China has record stocks, why are Chinese prices moving higher as are prices everywhere? And I think, there's a concern that has surfaced in China. So you get back to the question that he poses, how does cotton flow through China? It's a little bit different than the way things work here in the U.S. So here in the U.S., the producer can control their fiber even after the ginning process. But in China and also many other places around the world, cotton growers will sell their cotton to gins, and then the gin owns that cotton, and then they will market it to merchants or downstream in supply chains. So one thing that may be creating some bottleneck in terms of the stocks within China is that the gins bought cotton, the seed cotton, at prices that were they are saying is too high relative to what they're getting downstream. Some of that maybe need to be taken with a grain of salt. Also could be that gins are being speculative. Maybe they're withholding some of their supply from the market to help drive the market higher. But we don't know. But there is something going on with the flow of cotton in China that's preventing that supply that in theory should be available from weighing on the market there.
We've heard this over time. Nothing cures high prices like high prices. And part of our challenge here may be, are we destroying demand at these higher prices? And where do we compare as far as a fiber to some of the man-mades?
Yeah, so you take a look at the price difference for cotton compared to polyester, it's about as wide as it's ever been. So there's obviously some concern that we may be losing some market share there. But I think there also are some reasons to be encouraged on the demand front related to fiber share. One is that cotton's market share of the U.S. and also some other major apparel import markets was tracking higher before the latest run in prices. And even during that time period, there was a pretty healthy separation between cotton and polyester. So I think, you know, the downstream markets, the retailers and brands are looking at issues beyond simply prices at the moment. This contrasts, I think, pretty sharply with what we saw 10 years ago with a previous spike in prices. But I think, you know, some of the arguments that may be gaining more traction finally are the sustainability messaging that, you know, cotton has to offer as a natural fiber. That may be something that's helping, but I think, you know, we can take a look at the fact that we were trending higher, even we were at a disadvantage before this latest run as a source of encouragement. And hopefully that will prevent the demand destruction that we saw the last time around. Just one sort of final point there, too, is that, you know, in discussions we've been having with retailers, and, you know, there are a lot more discussions about cotton prices when they are as volatile as they have been recently. The shifting of fibers as an option that they're discussing is not as prevalent as it was 10 years ago either. So I think, you know, there's something that was contributing to the gain in cotton share that we've seen ahead of this latest run in prices. And I think that, you know, retailers are looking at other concerns, such as getting goods to market, and that's taking more precedence in terms of the fiber mix. So with any luck, I don't think that we will have the same decrease in market share that we did 10 years ago.
John, it's always good to visit with you. If we want to keep up with some of the work that you're doing there at Cotton Incorporated, can we do that online?
Certainly. So we have two economic publications available on our website, free to access, free to download. The flagship publication related to cotton prices is our monthly economic letter. There we review all the changes the USDA made to their supply-demand numbers and how that may tweak the situation for prices. Then we also have an executive cotton update. It's more geared for people that are looking to source cotton to ship apparel to the U.S., but it does provide coverage of downstream markets and the macroeconomic situation and how that may tie back into cotton fiber.
We can find all that through cottoninc.com, cottoninc.com. Senior economist with Cotton Incorporated is John Devine on today's Agribusiness Report.
Control your growing environment like never before with a Sunflower 1436 disc harrow. With a design that is fine-tuned to work precisely and easily, you can give each seed its best shot at a healthy return. Whatever your soil type or tillage practice, the Sunflower line of disc harrows is your best choice for rugged, reliable performance. Learn more at livingstonmachinery.com and to find a location near you. Livingston Machinery, 24/7 service for your 24/7 operation.
The best thing you can put on your crop is your shadow. Your need to be in the field won't change, and the Cotton Research and Promotion Program was put into place to make sure you get the most from every minute you're out there. That's why the Cotton Board and Cotton Incorporated work alongside growers to spur innovation, fund research, and foster sustainability so generations of farming families can walk the same turn rows for years to come. Forever Cotton. Visit cottonboard.org/forevercotton.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Our special guest today, John Devine with Cotton Incorporated.
The formula for success is a simple one. Put strong in, get strong out. That's why cotton growers looking to improve yield potential plant Delta Pine brand cotton, featuring 100 years of proven yield potential and exclusive genetics in every bag. Strong is a legacy all its own. Protect yours with Strong Cotton from Delta Pine. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Texas Corn Producers serves the state's corn farmers through both the Corn Board and the Association. The board is putting your checkoff dollars to work in research, promotion, and education to ensure producer profitability and market expansion. The member-supported association is the farmer's advocate in Austin and Washington, D.C. on issues from the Farm Bill, water and property rights, and more. Join the Texas Corn Producers Association today and get the latest news and information about Texas Corn Producers' efforts online at www.texascorn.org.
Welcome back. It's the Agribusiness Report. You can find more online about Cotton Incorporated, cottoninc.com.
At Golden Harvest, our best skill is knowing how to listen. From our Gold Series soybean and game-changing corn portfolios to our expert insights housed in the Illuminate Digital Agronomy platform, everything we offer is an answer to what we've heard from you. This is how we listen.
Copyright 2021 Syngenta. The trademarks or service marks used herein are the property of a Syngenta Group company. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners.
It's that time of year you've been waiting for. Commodity Classic is back. March 10th through 12th in New Orleans. Join the sorghum checkoff for a learning center session, finding the sweet spot, combining precision agriculture and conservation to build a sustainable and diverse farming landscape. Don't miss this cross-commodity, cross-sectoral collaboration with Pheasants and Quail Forever and Cotton Incorporated. Register online at commodityclassic.com or listen to it live here. Sorghum, the smart choice.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Well, Dr. Seth Meyer is chief economist at USDA, speaking recently at the Ag Outlook Forum on the corn to soybean ratio.
The new crop U.S. soybean to corn price ratio. So this is a ratio of those prices on which farmers at least pay this attention to in determining maybe where some of their marginal acres will shift. And you'll note that, relatively speaking, we have been at a favorable price to corn, with some shifting of that over to soybeans over time as the South American dryness has taken hold. And we're kind of down there in that area of 19 and 20. But I'll remind you that in 19 and 22, we were still emerging from trade friction. We were in trade friction with China and emerging from trade friction with China. So this really is a, you know, corn seeing, at least at the moment, a little bit more favorability than it has in the past, but beans obviously showing a lot of strength.